Have you ever wondered what life in the United States would be like if we just had a Constitution without the Bill of Rights? Well, that's going to be today's topic on We the People, Constitution Matters. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Bruce Stocking.
And I'm Corinne Lillis.
And we're going to be talking today with Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, Sam Rohr, the President of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and American Pastors Network. And we're going to be taking a journey into the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which its anniversary is coming up in just a matter of days. But what would this country be like without the Bill of Rights itself? The Bill of Rights are the first 10 amendments of the Constitution. And, for example, the First Amendment, the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to lodge grievance against your government, those freedom of the press, and then the Second Amendment, of course, where you have the freedom, the right to bear arms, and the various other freedoms that lay out in the Constitution. And the document itself was not even, when the Constitution was passed, was not even one that a lot were siding with, because there was no Bill of Rights. So you look at today what's going on and how the Constitution, how it's being ignored. But there's a foundation there which we can fall back on and say the Constitution, the law of the land says this, so what this administration, this president, this is wrong. This is constitutional violation. Without those Bill of Rights, they wouldn't be breaking the law. They could just simply go ahead and do it. So we're going to be talking about this today. And it's going to probably be a lively topic on this one, with discussion-wise. So why don't we get the ball rolling? Gary Porter is on the line with us. Gary will also be, and I have to throw this on, Gary will be also offering a basic Constitution seminar on Saturday, January 10th, 2015. And this will be held at the Conference Center at Valley Forge. And the conference itself will run from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. The cost is $30. Besides, with Gary talking about the Constitution, giving people an understanding of the document itself, there will be a continental breakfast involved and a lunch involved. And for more information on that, and you wish to register, you need to register by January 4th of 2015. You need to call Susan Locke here at the station at 610-539-1783, or you can email at info@1180wfyl.com. So without further ado, good morning, Gary, and how are things down in Virginia?
Everything's fine here, Bruce. We're getting ready for Christmas and getting all the chores around the house finished up, but I'm really, really getting excited about the class on January 10th. I think that's going to be a wonderful time.
Oh, we all are up here. I mean, it's just the excitement to get things going, you know, and all the gears going in. But what's going to happen that day will just be wonderful for folks to come and to experience, to learn, to see. And plus, they'll get to meet the We the People Constitution Matters A team here, all of us that are hosts and contributors. It's just going to be a fantastic day, and we're looking forward to it. So
one of the things they're going to learn is that there is a preamble not only to the Constitution, but there's a preamble to the Bill of Rights.
Oh.
Did you know that?
No. Give them a teaser.
Right. Well, when Congress sent the proposed 12 amendments that they that eventually came down to 10 out to the states, they included a resolution that kind of preceded those amendments, and it says the conventions of a number of the states, having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed the desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, etc., etc. So the preamble to the Bill of Rights tells us the purpose The purpose of the Bill of Rights was to prevent misconstruction of the Constitution, or to also prevent abuse of the powers of the Constitution. It was not to establish these 10 amendments as our rights. The amendments preceded even the Constitution. But to prevent there from being any misconstruction of the Constitution or to prevent abuse of powers, they thought these 10 amendments were necessary.
Well, isn't that convenient that nowadays what's going on, that part of the Bill of Rights is never mentioned, because that would really put a damper on such things as certain executive orders and things like that, don't you think?
Well, it would certainly prevent the idea that if you want to control guns, for instance, all you have to do is get rid of the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you get rid of the Second Amendment, you haven't changed anything in terms of your rights.
Well, yeah, you know, Gary, you look at the Second Amendment, it's probably one of the shortest of all of them on there. So, oh, that'd be easy. That's just short and little to get out of the way. Who's going to notice that?
Right. Well, that's not the way the founders looked at rights. The rights preceded the Constitution itself. And the Second Amendment was just a, oh, by the way, let's not forget that there is a right to bear arms sort of statement.
Right.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, Bruce, on our It's a New Day show, the Second Amendment, because I have so many feelings about
the amendment.
But, so we won't get into that today. I could talk for a while.
Yeah, Corinne's a very firm supporter of the Second Amendment, as we all are. But, Gary, the Bill of Rights, I mean... the Bill of Rights are something you hear talked about, the Constitution, Bill of Rights, all in one breath. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that will try to Google Bill of Rights, and they keep coming up with these amendments. But where is the Bill of Rights? You know, we're used to a bill type of thing. So where is it? Maybe a little clarification on it. And, of course, you've already started the fact on why they're so important to the Constitution and to our rights. Of course, rights given to us by God, but these locking those rights in governmental form. But maybe start us off.
Well, first of all, it wasn't called the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments were just the first 10 amendments until around the time of the Civil War. That's the first time people commonly began to refer to them as a Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. But let's go back even to the Convention of 1787. No one even thought of a Bill of Rights until the last few days of the 4 months of the convention. Then they happen to notice, hey, we haven't included any protections for what we know are basic human rights. And George Mason stood up and said, hey, I put together the Virginia Bill of Rights, or the Declaration of Rights as it was called, in 1776, and we could certainly put together in very short order a Bill of Rights or a Declaration of Rights for this Constitution. It wouldn't take much time, and we could throw it together pretty quickly.
I'm going to interrupt you there for a moment, Gary.
Yeah.
I want to give our station ID for all those who are now tuning in on their radio dial. Welcome and good morning. You're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters, right here on 1180 AM WFYL, working for your liberty. We're licensed in King of Prussia, Philadelphia. You can stream us online on our website, 1180WFYL.com. You can stream us also on the TuneIn app, and feel free to call in at any point during our program today. We're here until 8 a.m. You can call 610-539-TALK or 877-667-1180. And as always, you can email us info@1180WFYL.com. And our podcasts are available for you to listen to this show and any of other programs here on WFYL on our website at your convenience.
Thank you very much, Corinne. We've got to do those little legal niceties every now and then. But let's get back to the topic at hand, Gary.
So George Mason's idea of adding a Declaration of Rights was rejected for a couple of reasons. Basically, they thought that they were giving no power to this national government to infringe on rights. They were given a very specific enumerated powers, and none of them had anything to do with abridging the freedom of the press or freedom of speech or right to bear arms, etc. So they recognized that the power was not being given to the government to do that, so why have an expression of something that's already not there. That is, why are we telling the government not to do something that we've already not given it the power to do? And the other expression was that the state constitutions then in existence, almost all of them had bills of rights, declarations of rights, so the people's natural rights would be secure at the state level, and there was no need, it would be redundant to secure them at the national level. So we didn't get a Bill of Rights immediately. All we got was the Constitution. And it was then during the ratification process, as the 13 states began to really consider what the Constitution said or didn't say, that the need for a Bill of Rights became evident, and the anti-Federalists fought for it, and finally the Federalists said, okay, particularly in Massachusetts, which was the first real battleground over whether this was going to be ratified or not, the Federalists in Massachusetts said, okay, if you anti-Federalists will ratify, we'll give you the opportunity of sending in some proposed amendments and bills of rights, and they did. And so that kind of set the ball rolling for the other states to do likewise, and that's how we got the Bill of Rights. It was an agreement between the Federalists and the anti-Federalists, which was honored. You know, they honored their commitment to it.
Well, Gary, is it also fair to say that, you know, you look around the world and you watch the news, and as governments fall and reinstituted, you always hear them rewriting their constitution. Of course, we have never had to do that. But what really that sets, and a lot of folks I think might think that, well, you know, you've got country A over here, they got a new government in there, and they're going to write a new constitution for their government. But they miss the mark with their governments and their constitution because they do not have what we have, which are these Bill of Rights. Is that correct?
Well, correct, but let's go back even further to 1776. It was Thomas Jefferson who sat down and said, these rights are natural, God-given, endowed rights that cannot be extracted from you. They are inalienable. They can't be transferred. They are irrevocable. And very few countries have that kind of seminal work at the beginning of their inception, which establishes this concept that there are, in fact, natural rights.
Right, and you bring up a very good point there, and I want to bring Sam Rohr in on this conversation with that, is Sam, you know, Gary points out, we talk about it quite often, those natural rights, and we say the rights given by God. Can you clarify a little bit for folks that have heard this so much, and probably after a while they're kind of like, oh yeah, they always say that. The meaning here, if you can go into that.
Well, I'm thinking about this as Gary, you were talking and laying the foundation for the discussion. You know, at the end of the day, what we're talking about is civil law. The Constitution is our highest civil law. The Bill of Rights is a part of that law. All of those things go with it. But really predating or undergirding all civil law is moral law. There is some element of moral view, whatever, that underpins it. And without it, you really can't understand the civil law, which is why many countries do not have the essence of what we have. They look and they want the benefits of what we have, and they want the history and the heritage that we have been able to have here, but they don't understand where it came from. I think of when the United States, when we attacked, went into and dislodged Saddam Hussein, we wrote, if you all recall, a new constitution for Iraq.
We wrote that.
We wrote to it.
Oh, I wasn't aware of
that. Yeah, and
one.
We gave them. No, not we, you and I. But I mean, but
well, we should have. You
because
know,
if
been
we would,
you and I.
If we would have, it would have been written differently.
That's right.
But we gave them a constitution ostensibly to bring them into a democratic republic state and mindset. Well, there were two problems with it. I read that constitution, and that constitution was disaster because it wrote into it guaranteed health care. And things of that type that were so foreign to what we have in our Constitution, but in fact was the aim or the goal of the political group that wants to rewrite our Constitution.
So
that's
Sam,
what we wrote into their Constitution. But bear this in mind too, as well, as I'm thinking about it. A democratic republic, as we would put a representative republic,
right,
that understands these principles, they don't have the clue, the slightest clue in Iraq,
right,
coming out of a Muslim or Islam mentality, that he can even appreciate that to begin with. So what I'm saying is that beneath all of this is a worldview that is necessary in order to even give appreciation to the fact that there is an inalienable right, because an inalienable right says that there is a God. And that's what Penn talked about. You couldn't, even if you gave the best form of government and the best law, if you put people into it without integrity and character, they would despoil it and they would wreck it. Because they have to, in order to keep the republic, they have to be able to know what it is it came from to defend it. So the moral underpinning, the worldview, it's a biblical worldview, is absolutely essential to keep and maintain a constitutional republic, the Bill of Rights as we know it, because it all comes right out of the concept that these things came by God. If you reject that, then you're into saying, let's try to get around all of them.
So, yeah, well, you bring a very good point about the fact, you know, what you alluded to, what Gary put in his essay, too, and he alluded to Benjamin Franklin saying to Mrs. Powell, when she asked about what kind of government have you given us, he says, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. Is that they fought for it, they worked for it, they went through this, they understood this, where the Iraqis, not so much, because we did the legwork on basically freeing them from the tyranny they had. But then again, on the other side, of course, you wonder with Iraq, if we're putting in health care in there, that's probably why they're upset with us, because they lost their doctor and they lost their policy. But anyhow, you have Ukraine. Different story.
Same thing in Ukraine, and obviously we're working with them over there. Again, they look to the United States. They want what we had in our Constitution. We have heard it. They have said it. They have never had it. But when you sit down with them and begin to go through it, they don't really understand even many of the pastors there who really this is where it comes from. They don't understand how these principles relate to matters of civil government, how you take and bridge this gulf between what you know to be in truth and put it into practicality, they don't know. I mean, that's what underscores this whole thing that we're talking about here. The Constitution and all that we have was divinely ordered of God. It didn't just happen.
Yeah.
And, there's just no way that a small group of guys sat down one day and said, well, let's figure out something what to do. It didn't happen that way.
Yeah, Sam, this reminds me of when Jesus said to his followers that they had the little, I guess it was a denarius, a little gold coin, and he said, they asked, should we give it to Caesar? And he said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, but give to God what is God's. So it's like the whole foundation of, you know, paying people what you owe them, but the whole background, the whole foundation and truth of, you know, your life belongs to God, so everything coming from that
right.
First.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it just reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Gary. Mm-hmm.
Corinne, there's another truth in that little saying of Jesus, and that is that by saying that Caesar had certain obligations or expectations and God had others, Jesus has limited power of government. He has defined a limited sphere of influence for the government and a separate sphere of influence for God. So that's the concept of limited government comes right there.
Mm-hmm.
Government does not have this all-pervasive authority over every aspect of our lives. Jesus says there are limited a domain, if you will, that is Caesar's, and the rest is God's.
Mm-hmm.
In our Supreme Court, I just took a tour of pastors and legislators through our Supreme Court in Pennsylvania Monday of this week, and there is one thing on the wall up there that I think I've referred to before that delineates the concept of the hierarchy of law, written in the form of a musical scale, 8 pieces of law, divine law at the top, divine law at the bottom, and in the middle of it, natural law, international law, common law, basically the only other types of law that are there. The key point is that it starts with divine law at the top, and it ends with divine law or God's law at the bottom with a hold note on it, which means you anchor there. Mm-hmm. When I delineated that to the guys that are saying, see, here is what our founders here understood. They understood that there was no legitimate law outside God's law, and every bit of man's law had to be sandwiched between it, both on the top and on the bottom. And one of our House members that there's been in for several terms, and he's one of the good guys, I'd put him in that perspective, an attorney, he knows. When we got finished there, he said, you know, in front of everybody, he said, Sam, he said, you know, I've been in this room 50 times, And I've taken tour groups of young people through, he said, and I have never understood that concept. I have no idea that that's exactly what that's saying until this very moment. And so I say that to say that the concepts underlying what we're talking about are profound. They're deep. And it's not something you just all of a sudden stumble on in 1 hour. Some of these things are learned over time, and for us to not go back as we're doing now and to reiterate what the thinking and the dialogue was of these men who went through this, we are really harming ourselves. But doing what we're doing right now helps to refresh and help those who are listening to understand that this is not an immediate document. This is something that was worked over and prepared over a length of time in order to get it right.
I'm curious, how did we hold on to this for so long? Our founders understood this. For all these years, they held on to it, and then yet so quickly in these past years, it's gone away so rapidly. I don't understand how it could last so long and then fall away
well,
so quickly.
Well, I don't know if it's gone away. It's just simply
taken
for granted. It's there. It doesn't, it's something. It's just something old that's there. It doesn't keep up with the time.
But how did it never get taken for granted for before? Like,
Gary?
What happened?
Well, we've lost our understanding of where these rights come from.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, if these rights have not come from God, if they've not been endowed by our Creator, then where did they come from? The only other alternative is they came from government.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever government can today give you, government tomorrow can take away. So a right given by government is very different and very transitory compared to a permanent right that has been endowed to you by your Creator. But we've lost that view of the permanency of our rights.
Mm-hmm. And that really brings us to the same thing of Gary, what you're saying there, that even in defending or opposing the lawless behavior and the attitude we've been seeing both out of Washington to go around to undercut this document, we can defend it legally, which many do. We can defend it on that kind of, but my personal sense is, unless we go to the moral underpinning and establish the eternal truth that undergirds it, we will lose the battle. And I think that's partly where we've somewhat been afraid to say, wait a minute, this concept of second rights, the Second Amendment rights, in defending yourself is a biblical principle given to everybody, if a father in their home, whatever, to lay that out. If we're afraid to talk in those terms, we actually take off the table the strongest element of defense. And if we play on their field, which is the legal terminology and playing these games legally, we will lose it, which is what I think has been happening. Legally, bit by bit, incrementally, we just whittle it away by one court case, by one law here, one law there. And without going back to the root, I think we have taken our greatest strength off the table.
Yeah, of course, you look at the fact, too, about diversion. People, we fall very easily into complacency in late 20th and 21st century of things. Look at 9/11. As I always point out, we had 9/11 take place. You didn't see folks with a lot of American flags out there. The next day, flags are everywhere, and you ask the question, where was your flag before that? Now, where are the flags? They've kind of dwindled away because it turns into old news and that. But when we come back from our break, I want to get a little bit more into this and with the fact that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the meaning of the two, we'll talk to Gary and Sam on this one, is the Constitution being the foundation, the Bill of Rights being the structure itself and how we tend to look. We're also, after the break, going to be joined by a new contributor to our program, which will be Dr. Colleen Sheehan, and we'll be including her in the conversation, too. So we're going to be taking a short break, and please stick with us. You're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters, right here on 1180 AM WFYL. Stay tuned. And thanks for sticking with us through the break. You're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters. In today's topic, we're talking about the Bill of Rights and what life would be like without the Bill of Rights. Basically, understanding what they are. The Bill of Rights being the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And on the program today, along with myself and my co-host, Corinne Lillis, we have Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, Sam Rohr, President of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and the American Pastors Network. And also joining us is a new contributor to our program, Dr. Colleen Sheehan. And she is a professor of politics, director of the Matthew J. Ryan Center for Studies in Free Institutions and the Public Good. And she's also a former state legislator, along with our friend Sam Rohr here. And before we get going again, Colleen, I want to welcome you to the program.
Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Doing quite well. We had Colleen on our It's a New Day program, in which we talked to her. She wrote a book about James Madison, and we talked a little bit about that. And since we are today talking on the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, it's a natural fit. But I want to get the ball rolling. Back to you first, Gary, is the question that I have, and I kind of alluded to it at the just prior to the break, is when we look at the entire document, the United States Constitution / with the Bill of Rights, is it fair to say for people to understand, because when you hear things talked about, say, like using the example that a lot of folks are familiar with, is the overreach of government with this president and his executive orders violating the Constitution, is that the Constitution itself is more like the position description for the government, and that the Bill of Rights are really the nuts and bolts that say what you can do and can't do?
Well, as we've talked about, the Bill of Rights was seen as a second guarantee. That is, people believe that these were pre-existing human rights that everyone had a right to, and the Bill of Rights was just a statement kind of making sure there was no misunderstanding about that point. As I said earlier, it was to prevent misconstruction or abuse of powers. So, the idea that these rights came from government is absolutely foreign to the way that the founders would have considered it. They understood that these rights preexisted any document, any government. They came at the moment of creation. The same God who created everything we see and created natural laws and physical laws, the moment he created the law of gravity, he also created the idea of human rights. So it has preexisted anybody and any government.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let's bring Colleen into this. Colleen, you, of course, studied and wrote about James Madison. I think he had a little involvement in this with the Bill of Rights and so forth. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit on the thoughts that Madison had when faced with writing the, being a part of this and being basically the man who took the lead.
That's exactly right, Bruce, and Gary has said this very well, but it's interesting because Madison originally did not want to add a Bill of Rights to the Constitution, and neither did Alexander Hamilton or a number of the founders, and the reasoning was this, that just as Gary said, this is not a government in the United States in which the government gives rights to the people, it's the reverse. The people give power to the government. And our old mother country, Great Britain, did it the other way, where the people gradually got more and more rights, starting with Magna Carta, from the government. But in the United States, they didn't want there to be any misconception that the people have rights, they have natural rights. And then there are such things as civil rights that have to do with things like trial by jury and so forth. And Madison's idea was, well, what we've got to be really careful about is not to misconstrue, not to in any way have the wrong impression that things that aren't listed are not right. So he wanted to be very, very careful of that.
Mm-hmm. And Sam, with those type of rights and that, but again, it's still, let's say, Christian-based, I mean, God-based is, fairness that goes through, and which a lot of these rights layout. Am I correct?
Well, no, you're absolutely correct. You know, here in Pennsylvania, and I've referred to it before, Penn's frame of government, which I personally think had a tremendous amount to do. I mean, actually, Franklin and Jefferson both referred to him as father of founders. He laid out in the frame of government of the 10 basic principles that had to be understood if you're going to put together what we have now, a republic. And the first one is the sovereignty of God. That's where he was a creator. He broke those things out. Then he talks about man and the man's proclivity to sin, and that if you left a man uncontrolled, he would devolve. He wouldn't get better. And then lays out the purpose for law, why there is law of all type, and then why there is a purpose of government, and talks about the limitations on government, praise those who do well, punish those who do evil, justice, that emphasis. But he brings that all together in a framework that if you take all those together, then you can have what you have. But if you reject any one of those elements, I don't think you can go to and actually end up with a document with the depth and understanding such as what we have in a constitution. I'll finish with this. Penn said that you could not have this experiment in self-government, which is what we're talking about. If you talk about a limited government, of limited civil government, then you're talking about a big individual self-government.
Right.
That you could not have that unless the people, citizens, and those in government limited themselves, constrained themselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. So he understood that the higher law, God's law, had to be the restraining law, and if we jumped outside of that, like we talked about in the first half, if we jumped outside of that, you would have illegitimate law, you would have tyranny. A limited government has to be a constrained government. The only reason government is constrained is because the people wish to be restrained properly under God, big self-government, and they put into government those who also understand that rights come from God. Government is the servant of the people. They're not God of the people. You twist that mentality, and then you have the same kind of thing we have most countries around the world. And I think the root of why we're having such an attack against our Constitution and the constitutional form of government now in our country.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of that comes from the fact of lack of knowledge, ignorance to it, to the fact. But Sam, ever since we started this program, is you have routinely, and rightfully so, brought in Billy Penn and Billy Penn's concepts. And if you look at the Constitution, you look at the Bill of Rights, there's Billy Penn all through this. And, Gary, my question to you is, how did Billy Penn work into it with the others, the Virginians and those others that sat down with the maybe starting with the Articles of Confederation, then eventually going to the Constitution Bill of Rights? Did they have a working knowledge of this man?
Well, there's no surprise to the fact that all of the original state constitutions shared a common view of man and a common view of rights. They were all Christians. They understood the source of rights, the source of natural rights. So we shouldn't be surprised to find that there are some commonalities between these documents that were written by separate people in separate times. They shared a common worldview. They shared a biblical worldview that shaped everything that they did and said. So that being said, then they all have this view that the rights are permanent, that our rights are endowed and unalienable, and whether they use that exact same expression that Jefferson did in the Declaration or not, it's still the concept, the thought is underlying everything that they understood at the time.
I want to bring in Colleen here and anyone else who wants to chime in. But, Gary, you put in your article, you said, at law schools, natural rights theory was replaced by legal positivism, the theory that
right.
all laws and thus the rights that laws protect are the creation of man. So, essentially, you also wrote, this is why you can find on today's White House website a sentence that says, the Second Amendment grants us the right to bear arms, which, I mean, clearly the Second Amendment doesn't grant. The grant is, you know, obviously not the right word, but Colleen, what's your, being a professor, what's your viewpoint of how things have changed with how the Constitution has been interpreted, and what have you tried to do, you know, to reverse that, to go back to how it was originally placed?
Oh, Corrine, that's a really good question. And that's correct, that probably the prevailing way of thinking today is legal positivism. But legal positivism isn't just something that's just developed today. Actually, we see this full-blown with Stephen Douglas and the Lincoln-Douglas debate. Because legal positivism is the idea that the idea of justice, the idea of what's right and what's wrong, that human beings just create that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the founders, the idea is that we have to discover justice. We have to discover what's right and what's wrong. And how do we do that? By thinking through what it means to be human, and that's where the idea of natural law comes in. And I would say that while most of the founders were Christians, we also have to realize that not everybody in America then was a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember George Washington's letter to the Hebrew congregation, for example. And so the idea of natural law is that this is something accessible to all human beings, regardless of religion, or even regardless of race, ethnicity, sex, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just by virtue of being human, we can think through these questions on the basis of our reason to discover what's right, what's wrong, what's just, what's unjust.
Well, with that, Sam, where have we gotten off track here? And how have we gotten off track?
Well, Bruce, we've gotten off track because the very underpinning of what Colleen, you were just talking about, everything we're talking about, assumes a premise that there is truth and that there is absolute truth. There is right and there is wrong. If we take that concept and we jettison that concept and to move into the days of moral relativism, which really drives our culture today, then, in fact, you have no anchor point, morally or anything else. And everything becomes, in fact, relative, meaning it depends on the circumstance. It depends upon who's the most powerful, who has the majority, whatever that may be. That's where I think we have. That's where I think we've moved from that point, Bruce. That's been the subtle erosion of the foundation. If you lose the concept of absolute truth, you cannot defend the fact that it is always wrong to steal, or that it is always wrong to kill. It depends on the circumstances. And that really is how many are beginning to rule from the bench. It's kind of, well, it depends. Well, no, it does not depend.
And you take a look with current events that's going on, for example, with Ferguson, with New York, where now in Berkeley, California, where protesting an issue entitles you to bust into a store and loot the store, the steal, to be accepted. This is justice, and this is the mindset that we're starting to see. Well, we have seen, but we're now physically again seeing it on the nightly news that's going in, where they're taking that stealing one of the Ten Commandments. Oh, don't worry about that because we have the right to do that now. Is this what we're looking at?
It is the natural end, Bruce, of unrestrained. See, that is not self-government. If we look at Ferg and the action on the street, all these things, this is the antithesis of true self-government. These are individuals that have said, God, who? Ten Commandments? Who? It depends. It's up to me. I will go and take from my neighbor what is theirs because I think that's right. Well, that is lawlessness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rejection of absolute truth. But in a civil law perspective, since our civil law is based on those, it also then enters into lawlessness from a civil perspective. That's why the police have to be out there trying to control it. But left uncontrolled, you have a total breakdown of self-government. We can't exist if people collectively say, I'm going to do my own thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. Go ahead, Gary.
It brings to mind Psalm 11:3. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? And this is the root of the problem. There are people who are trying purposefully to destroy the foundations that this country was built upon.
Mm-hmm.
And if they succeed, the righteous will be, flying in the wind because there will be no foundation for our law and government if they destroy that foundation.
Right. And, of course, with any type of law, laws are great and fine, but they need to be enforced. And, Colleen, let me bring you in on this one, too, is the enforcement of the law. Both you and Sam were in the state legislature, and you pass laws that need to be enforced, but if they're not being enforced or they're being laxed or they're being chosen, you know, which laws you're going to do, that puts you in a bit of a hard place, and then the public itself going, well, they're not going to enforce that, so don't worry about it.
Right, and you know, the idea of the rule of law is so incredibly important in this country, and I wish that even when we disagree with it, we have to work to change it, but we have to abide by it while it's in existence. Because what's the alternative? Well, there are two alternatives to the rule of law, and both of them are forms of arbitrary government. One is mob rule, mm-hmm. and the other is despotism. Mm-hmm. And so the rule of law, I think that we need to sort of remind ourselves as citizens how fortunate we are to live in a country in which the rule of law prevails.
Right.
And it becomes a bit like a contagion if we're not careful, this spread of mob rule and violence. So I wish that the folks in Ferguson, if they disagree, I think they should speak out.
Mm-hmm.
But disobedience to the law is not the answer.
Right. You bring up a very good point. And, you know, Gary, I want you on this one as well, is that, and I've said this many times on our New Day program with various news stories, if you don't like a law, just don't take it upon yourself to change that law on your own. There is a process through the Constitution that allows us, you know, we have the power of voting. We can vote laws. And I tend to bring a lot to what seems to be a tsunami that's going through the country here, and Montgomery County, Pennsylvania here started the one thing where we had an individual who was an elected official in a county office that started on his own breaking the Commonwealth law by issuing marriage license to same-sex couples, and really he was pursued on the thing. He broke the law. He just decided, well, I'm changing the law on my own, so therefore I'm going to do this. We need to stop this because this is contributing to the problem that eventually comes into the things where I can loot the store. Hey, you know, it's a law, yeah, but hey, it's my right to do this. Gary?
Bruce, one of the things I asked early on in my classes is in my introductory remarks, I asked for a show of hands of how many people have corresponded either by email or phone call with their elected representative in the last 24 hours. And of course, phrase that way, there's no hands that go up. All right, so let's say in the last 7 days, and maybe one or two hands go up, and then in the last 30 days, maybe one more. So here's the rub. We live in a representative republic. And if people are not corresponding, if they're not communicating with their elected representatives as to what changes they'd like to see, then nothing's going to be changed, at least not in the way you'd like it to be.
Right. I think
so. We have to engage with our elected representatives. They've got to know us like their next-door neighbor. They've got to hear from us, if not every day, certainly every week.
Yeah, you know, Gwen Alexander brings out a point, too, with a lot of, at least on with the state realm, and I'm sure it deals with the federal realm too, that to get a representative's attention on a certain issue, all it takes is 10 phone calls or a combination of phone calls and people visiting him or her on that thing, and then they start taking a notice of the topic.
I've asked, Bruce, on her show before different state reps and senators, you know, do you feel like enough people contact you, or do you think that, you know, you want to hear more from what whoever you represent is mm-hmm. thinking, and they say they definitely feel like not enough people contact them.
Yeah, well, you know, we also deal with a realm that needs to be understood, that these people that we vote for, we're hiring them in the process, they're employees, and we can go and see them at any time, to voice an opinion on things. Now, that may work very fine in local, state and local law, but on the federal level, which you find, with the Constitution, that, you know, you've got some people going in. We talked about with the Second Amendment. Oh, you know, that thing, that pesky thing, we need to get rid of this thing. But it's not that easy, is it, Gary?
No, it shouldn't be that easy. And let's bring up one more amendment that's very, very important, and that's the Ninth Amendment, which says that they may have overlooked some rights that they should have mentioned and didn't, and it says that there are natural rights outside these first eight that we've talked about in the first eight amendments. And that's an important concept, too, that there are natural rights that we have been endowed that aren't necessarily listed in the Bill of Rights, but they are still ours. And if you don't invoke and stand on those rights, then government is going to take them away or at least ignore them.
Yeah.
And one of those, if I can
go ahead,
interject here, one of those rights that's not listed in the Bill of Rights that Madison very, very much wanted to be part of the Bill of Rights, because as you know, he was the author.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Bill of Rights, is the right of conscience. He considered the right of conscience to be a natural right and probably the most fundamental of all our rights. And so we can't assume that things that are not written down aren't ours. We have to think of it the other way. We have to understand that we have rights that come from nature that government must respect.
Sam?
And Colin, I think that's a great point of bringing that up. And because I think, again, underpinning all of this, the emphasis is, I mean, you know, Gary, you mentioned we're not defending them. A step back is that we can't defend what we don't know.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of this program's purpose, is to help understand and help teach the underpinning so that people know that what we have didn't come by accident. But even then, you don't really go in even to speak to your representative or senator or anybody else on a particular issue other than to complain if it hurts you. Most of the time, when we hear from people,
yeah.
then they, hey, I don't like that. But rather, I appreciated those who would come into my office in the past and would engage on a particular issue and ask the reason, why are you doing what you did? Or what is this to accomplish, or why, or get down to the root, because at that point, now you begin to think and say, why am I doing what I'm doing? And it drives you to the underlying fundamental principle. And I think that's, if I'd encourage people who are listening to the program to think of that, every point of issue we're talking about has an underlying principle. And I would say, yes, a biblical principle that underpins it, that anchors it to moral truth. When that anchor is there, then you can defend why, you can talk about it, you can say, wait a minute, Mr. Representative, this appears to be off mark. And knowing that that is consistent with the Constitution, you have together moral law, civil law together that are not only defensible, but as we're talking about it, you know, outside the Bible, the most important document in the history of the world.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Bruce, I think we should tell our listeners about the event we have.
Well, just getting there, because besides what Sam pointed out, listening to this program, learn it, Gary, you're going to be teaching a seminar up here on Saturday, January 10th, are you not?
Absolutely. And in preparation for that, I would like everybody to read their Constitution.
There you go. Now this
and in preparation for next week, I think we really need to continue this discussion of rights and how they are protected, how they are rightfully protected. I think everybody should get out their pocket constitutions and read the Bill of Rights. And as you read each one of them, just kind of hypothesize or picture in your mind what life without that particular right would be, and that's the whole theme of this show, and hopefully next week as well. Think about what it would be like without that particular protection that particular right has secured for you.
Yeah, it's definitely a topic we'll pursue next weekend, next Friday as well. But to remind folks real quickly, Saturday, January 10th at the Conference Center at Valley Forge, Gary Porter will be offering a Constitution seminar, The Basics of the Constitution. It'll go from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. There will be continental breakfast and lunch provided. The cost will be $30. To register, you can call the station at 610-539-1783. Talk Susan Locke, or you can email at info@1180wfyl.com. It's well worth, if you're a regular listener or you want people to regularly listen and understand the Constitution, this is a gem to go to, folks. And I cannot stress it enough how important it is. But again, it's Friday. We're at an end of another fast-paced hour on the Constitution of the United States. We have been talking to Gary Porter, Sam Rohr, Colleen Sheehan, myself, Bruce Stocking, along with Corinne Lillis, my co-host. Christmas is coming, folks. We do say Merry Christmas here, and I wish you a Merry Christmas. And join us next week as we continue talking about the Constitution, what life would be like without a Bill of Rights. And since the weekend's up there coming up, there's a lot of things to do for the upcoming Christmas holidays. Tell you what, why don't you go out and do it with your family? Enjoy yourselves. We'll see you next week. The Constitution. Have you ever really wondered what that document means? Hi, I'm Bruce Stocking, the host of We the People, Constitution Matters, heard right here at 1180 AM WFYL on Fridays from 7 to 8 in the morning. I'd like to announce that our own Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, will be presenting a basic Constitution seminar on Saturday, January 10th, 2015, from 8:30 AM to 5:30 PM.
That's at the Conference Center at Valley Forge. The cost of the seminar includes materials, a continental breakfast, and lunch, and that's all for just $30. You have to register by January 4th. You can call Susan Locke at 610-539-1783. Or email us, info@1180wfyl.com.
This is a wonderful offering to have a basic Constitution seminar. You could learn about the document as those early Americans did. Take back possession of your country. Take back possession and ownership of the Constitution by attending this seminar. After all, we the people matter.